Gamerheads Podcast is part of the Little Fellow Media Podcast Network, sponsored by podcast host Budsprout, the easiest podcasting software for hosting, promoting, and tracking your podcast.
If you love retro video games and want to watch eight or more gamers compete for video game glory, come join us for the RGB High Score Live Tournament. We play one Wednesday a month at 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time at twitch.tv/retrogamebrews. Join us on October 30th for Zombies Ate My Neighbors. For more information and updates, follow us on Twitter at retrogamebrews. RGB High Score. Relive the past.
And welcome to another episode of Gamerheads. My name is Roger, a.k.a. RogueLeader76. And with me are my co-host Mike,
a.k.a. Pezman Mike.
And my co-host Christian,
a.k.a. Fulgen.
And my co-host Blue,
a.k.a. Writer's View.
Welcome to the show and welcome listeners from Honolulu, Hawaii, home of such notables as NFL quarterback Marcus Mariota, Olympic silver medalist volleyball player Heather Brown, and Olympian and ROH wrestler Jeff Cobb. So welcome.
Do you know what the state fish is called?
I don't.
It's, I'm going to butcher this, but I'm going to do what I can. It's called the Hamanama Wanawana Ukawa'a.
Oh.
That's not a joke. That's real.
I believe you.
Something like that. I think it's. I apologize to our Hawaii listeners, but yeah. I did the best I could.
No, that's awesome.
With my Midwestern accent.
Has anyone been to Hawaii?
No.
I actually have been to Hawaii. Yeah.
Better than us?
Yeah, I do. That was the first time I realized that I get seasick really, really bad.
Oh,
yeah, we did a snorkeling and snuba diving, and then they had snuba diving is weird. It's like snorkeling mixed with scuba diving. So to have, instead of having a tank on your back, you have a tank floating on top of the water, and then you have the compressed air tied to your mask. So you're tethered to this tank of air, and they usually have like three or four people or. Yeah, four or five people actually tethered to this thing, but you still have to like go up slowly because if you go up too fast, your lungs will expand and then you'll die. So when you're underwater,
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's really weird. We did that, and I will say a side note here: it's really weird when you're swimming in the water and you can breathe underwater with this mask. And the instructor said, you know, you're going to like freak out. Like you have to just put your head in the water. And hold on to the side of the tank and then just, you know, breathe in and breathe out and count to five. And when I come tap you on your shoulder, you're good to go. So I was the first one he tapped on his shoulder. He's like, you're good to go. You can go. Just go ahead and swim because you got this. And, you know, it was fine when I was just sticking my head in the water. But once I got underwater, I started freaking out. And I was like, oh, my God, I can't breathe. And I was like, I kept taking in more and more air. And then I realized, oh, you idiots, you could breathe.
Breathing out is what you think you wouldn't know you could do.
I know it's weird, but it's a weird like sensation that your mind has to, you're tricked and you have to like teach yourself that, yes, you can breathe in and breathe out. But yeah, I got so seasick on that trip on the way back. And like I one of the people on the trip there, like one of the instructors said, oh, you don't look good. Like holding onto the side of the boat. I'm like, mm-mm. And he's like, all right, here's some ginger ale. Drink this.
Oh, that'll help.
Oh, but then we went to Walmart because they do have a Walmart on the island, and then I just got some Dramamine and that helped. But man, that first trip we had, ugh, it was so bad. And then the next night we had a dinner cruise. I'm like, oh no, this is gonna be really bad.
Dramamine, don't fail me now.
Yeah, but it's really, I will say, it's probably one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. Expensive for sure, but one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. So welcome listeners from Honolulu and welcome listeners from all over the world and welcome listeners and members of the Gamerheads Nation, which is Miguel, a.k.a. at Sergeant Fitgeets, Torto, a.k.a. J Tortle, or at J Tortle 40, and Tim at Great Saiyaman 81. They support Gamerheads through our Patreon page, and only for $5 a month, you too can be part of the Gamerheads Nation. The link to the Patreon page is in the show notes. Please consider supporting our podcast, and thank you so much for those that have signed up already. We really appreciate it. And we're halfway to the goal of having a Patreon dedicated Discord server. So, yeah, if that's something that interests you, check it out. All right, so we have a lot to cover today. We have quite a bit in the news. Some news about PlayStation actually finally supporting cross-play with other consoles. And some news about the Writers Guild and also about Mario Kart Tour. But before we get into all that, we do have an icebreaker. And Blue, do you want to talk about this icebreaker?
Sure. This one was sent to me on Twitter by our good friend Jordan, who's been on the show a couple times, and you can find him on Twitter at @crypticjordan. But he asked, let's say you have a little kid and they have nightmares quite often, but they want to play a scary game. What game do you suggest first to start them off slow? It's me. I'm the little kid, he says.
Oh, that's a good question. I can think of a lot of games that I wouldn't have them play right away. Mike, do you have any ideas you want to start?
I do, actually.
Okay. All right.
And actually, this is not just a recommendation. It's also something I actually did.
Oh.
So when my son was probably about 4 years old and starting to getting into video games, I wanted to find a good game for him to play. And it just so happened that this one game was kind of a scary game for a kid to play. And that game was Super Ghouls and Ghosts for the Sega Genesis.
Yeah.
You started him off on something that difficult?
That's scary.
That's
for
a real nightmare.
Yeah, we have Spartan ancestry. So, and here's actually, I'm glad you brought that up. In the game, there are two cheat codes. One of them that gives you infinite lives, and the other one makes enemies pass through you.
So both of those.
Yes, so I use both of those and just let them have at it. So it's a scary game. It's zombies and whatnots, but it's also good for 2D platforming and other fun stuff. So he was able to beat the games. He probably played it like 15, 20 times. But it was a good way for him to get into gaming.
Wow.
And had the added benefit of being an awesome game.
At 4 years old?
Yeah.
With the codes?
We were playing games at 4 years old.
Yeah. Well, I was playing Pong at 4 years old. I don't know if that's really a game. That's cool. That's a good pick, Mike. What about you, Christian? Do you have a pick?
I would probably pick Psychonauts.
Yes.
It doesn't take place during Halloween, but it's got a lot of fall and Halloween vibes where you're at a summer camp and there's leaves and acorns and squirrels, and like the character designs are so wacky it might as well be them dressed up in a bunch of Halloween costumes, and you're just hopping from brain to brain seeing what set piece sets up next on your journey of self-discovery.
Mm-hmm. And plus it's got that great black humor sense of black humor that they use.
Good stuff.
Yeah,
good
Oh boy, now I feel like I've never played that game, so I feel like I should play that game.
Get the chalkboard out. They have the port on PS4 that I tell you, so you can go download it and never touch it.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what I played it through on and got the platinum trophy on. It was the PS2 version on PS4.
Yeah, it's like $9 or something. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And when's the second one coming out? Did they delay that one?
To be announced.
Yeah.
Still. It's fine. I'm not disappointed. It's fine.
Good pick. What about you, Blue?
Definitely Plants vs. Zombies.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's such a fun game. You know, it's simple, so anybody of any age can just pick it up and play. And plus, the cartoon zombies are so cute. And if you get all the way to the end, you get that sunflower song.
Oh, ooh, yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do own that game. I do like that game a lot.
That game. I've played that game through like 400 times. I even rebought it on my 2DS because I can't say no to Plants vs. Zombies. And it's different on the 2DS.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
That has a microphone. So there's one level. Oh, I'm not finished with it yet, but there's one level where, you know, Crazy Dave is the neighbor that gives you, like, kind of guides you through the game. And he says, okay, now in this level, you have to shout encouragements to your plants because it's really hot and they get tired. So, like every so often when your plants kind of droop, then you have to go, go plants! And so I'm yelling at my 2DS and my dogs were like laying on the ground and they're like looking up at me like, what the heck is wrong with you? It's like, it's fine. Go back to sleep. Go plants!
It's funny how like the 2DS, 3DS, like, well, even DS games too, right? That they try to utilize that microphone. Like, I remember playing a game where you would have to, I don't remember what it was, but it was like a fan and you had to blow into the microphone to get the fan to spin. It's just kind of, I mean, it's cool, but it's kind of goofy too.
Yeah, it's kind of gimmicky. I would prefer just to not.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's fine. It was only one level so far, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Plants vs. Zombies is a great introduction to tower defense, too, because it starts out very simple. You got the pea shooters and the sunflowers, and then it slowly ramps up from there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good game. For myself, I would have to pick... Oh, boy, I have two games that come to mind. The first one is Zombies Ate My Neighbors. I think that's a good one. And speaking of which, there's that tournament coming up at the end of the month. So check that out for Retro Game Brews. You can go to @RetroGameBrews and check out more about that. And then also follow them on their Twitch channel, which is twitch.tv/RetroGameBrews. And check out that challenge. The other game that I was thinking of was any of the Luigi Mansion games. Well, the two that are out right now, I guess. The Luigi Mansion games, those are good games too. They're not necessarily scary, but, you know, I don't know.
Entry-level scary.
Yeah, they're entry-level scary. Yeah, I mean, there's... You know, there's some moments where, I mean, obviously Luigi's very scared. He thinks it's really scary.
Luigi's Mansion 1 is a great introduction to just general survival horror, where you're in the mansion and you got to find the keys and you got to unlock the doors and turn the power on in certain spots to get further.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'm excited for the third one that comes out in a couple weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's exciting. So... Cool. Well, listeners, what are some games that you think would be a good intro game to scary games that kids can start playing? You can let us know. You can send us a tweet @GamerHeadsPC. You can send us an email at info@GamerHeadsPodcast. You can go to our Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/GamerHeadsPodcast. Or you can go to our website at GamerHeadsPodcast.com and leave us a message there as well. So thank you for that suggestion, Jordan. So, right, let's move on then to the news. So the first item here, Christian, you want to take the first item that we have here?
Yes, this one comes from Nintendo Life. Oddly enough, PS4 finally supports full cross-play compatibility with Switch and other consoles, according to a new report. So PS4 has remained in what apparently was a beta state when it came to cross-play, but a new report from Wired says that the beta has now come to an end. And it reads, quote, "While it's not announcing the news explicitly, the PS4's cross-play efforts have officially moved out of the beta stage, meaning that the console can support cross-play on any titles that studios provide the functionality for. This month's Modern Warfare may be the first major title to take advantage of it right at launch, and it likely won't be the last."
Mm. Whoa. Even though the new Modern Warfare has that exclusive mode.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's mixed messages. Get it on PS4 because of the exclusive mode, but hey, crossplay.
Yeah. Yep. No, I mean, it's interesting that they finally caved. Well, what seems to be finally caved, right?
No. They didn't cave. It was beta.
Oh, that's true. That's true. They were planning it this whole time.
It was the whole time. Yep.
It was there the whole time. They just, fine, we'll do it. Fine. No, I mean, it's cool. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of games that I would like to play with other people that that because they have an Xbox, I wasn't playing. And that's the whole reason I actually got an Xbox One, is because I could play some games with other people because they play exclusively on Xbox. And I have a, well, I was playing exclusively on PlayStation 4. Now what do I do with my Xbox? No, I still like
that. Sell it and buy the Death Stranding PS4 Pro.
Yeah, I could do that.
That's a joke. That's a joke.
Well, that's exciting, though. I don't know why they, I mean, outside of the fact that they said, oh, Modern Warfare, like, will be the first major title. I mean, that's cool, except, like, that's not on the Switch. So, yay for, I guess,
Nintendo Life reporting equally.
No, what? That's, I read that. I'm like, okay, great. But it's not going to be on the Switch. But cool. That's cool.
I bet they just grab stories from a news service.
Yeah.
It might even be a bot. Who knows?
The time, the wait time on this story seems to be very calculated. Because what was it, like a year ago when the Fortnite on Switch happened and everyone was freaking out and giving PS4 all the flack they possibly could that crossplay wasn't working. And they're like, what is wrong with you, Sony? What are you doing? You guys have problems. You guys need to figure this out. And they're like, okay, well, we don't want to do crossplay. And then they just waited. They just let it die down. And now here they are with good news, because now everyone's going to be like, oh, that's so nice of them. Instead of, it's about time, Sony.
That's a good point, Christian. The little bit of PR spin there.
Interesting. Sean Layden.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how that works out. I mean, they kept saying that they can't do it because of, you know, there's exclusive stuff in the PlayStation that, you know, just wouldn't work well with other consoles. We'll see. We'll see how this works. So, all right. The next item here. Blue, do you want to take the next one?
Sure. This comes from US Gamer. The Writers Guild won't be awarding video game writing until more games are made by members. So, starting in 2020, the Writers Guild of America will not be awarding video game writing that year due to lack of what the guild describes as a critical mass of WGA-covered games. First rumbling started when Insomniac writer Mary Kenny said she'd been told the WGA was suspending the category. In what she described as, quote, one step forward, seven steps back, she said she was 98% confident in it being true. In a statement to US Gamer, a spokesperson for the Writers Guild confirmed the category would be suspended for the time being. While the door was left open for it to return, the issue seems to be a lacking presence of WGA-covered games. Statement, quote, there won't be a video game writing award in 2020. However, the category will be reinstated when there is a critical mass of video games covered by the WGA in order to provide a meaningful award selection process. Going back through the WGA's awards records, the category has been around since at least 2008, where Deadhead Fred for the PlayStation Portable won. Last year's nominees include Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Batman The Enemy Within, Marvel's Spider-Man, Pillars of Eternity 2, Deadfire, and the winner, God of War.
Wow.
Can I translate this?
Please.
We want more money for membership fees.
Yeah. And
we're going to pull this award until more people give us money for membership fees.
Yep. And that's actually, that was a lot of the response actually from writers saying this is just a way to drive membership.
Yeah. Have you ever looked at what it actually takes to join the Writers Guild?
I have not.
Because I for anybody who doesn't know, I went to grad school for screenwriting. So I have looked. And it's ridiculous. It is so prohibitive. Not only cost, but the things you have to have accomplished in your career before they'll even consider letting you in. It's insane. It is very clearly just for established, successful writers. And so if you're a little nobody working on a little project, even though you are absolutely professional, you're never going to be able to get in either by accomplishments or by being able to just freaking afford it.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that these types of guilds are very important because writing is a legitimate skill and it's an art and it needs to be done properly by people who know what they're doing. But I think the Writers Guild risks becoming obsolete, essentially, because they won't let anybody participate.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say the same thing. I mean, like, what's stopping then somebody from saying, "Well, you know what? We'll just start our own writers' awards, right?" Like, that's ridiculous because
it's a little bit like the Academy Awards. Yeah. Like everybody says that the Oscars become more and more irrelevant to what is actually going on in the world, to what people actually watch and want to watch, and then you have them just kind of stubbornly refusing to change and saying, "Nope, this is how it is."
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I think, you know, things like the Writers Guild, and I'm more familiar with like actor guilds and such. I mean, I think that they certainly play an important piece in some of the guilds, I should say, like certainly play an important piece in how the industry is run. But yeah, this just like I'm taking my ball.
Could this get any more elitist? Really, yeah, is what
exactly.
You're saying.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like, and you know, to your point, there's some really good games out there that are probably indie games that are really well written, but they'll never be recognized because they're not part of this, you know, guild. That's just so absolutely ridiculous and so elitist and really kind of goes against everything that these things are supposed to be set up for.
Yeah, exactly. If you're selling your indie game for $15 and you have a team of three people and you worked your keisters off and it's amazing, you don't have the money to join the Writers Guild and you definitely don't have the credentials.
Yeah, exactly. That's too bad. That is really too bad. There should be like a new guild started by like the real Writers Guild.
The real Writers Guild.
But yeah, it does become an elitist organization, and that's, I don't know, that's crap. Yeah. But no, I think you're right, Mike. I mean, that's what a lot of people went to Twitter right away and said, yep, this is just a membership drive that they're trying to run right now.
Mm-hmm. Because, so. I mean, especially last year's nominees, they talk about Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Spider-Man, God of War. Those are big titles. And yeah. They're saying there's not enough to choose from. What are they complaining about? Right. Those were good quality titles and big titles.
Yeah.
So stop whining that there's not a critical mass.
Yeah.
And besides, what does that even mean?
Yeah. Right. And what is it costing them to give out an award?
Yeah.
Well, you pick some games and you say, okay, good work. Okay, thanks. Like,
just other than they're tarnishing the shining reputation of the Writers Guild just by associating yourself with something called Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire.
How dare you
bring
that into our little circle of elitist.
You're getting your commoner dirt on my money.
What is the threshold too? That's my question. Like, once we reach 80%, then we'll allow this to, I mean, like, at what point do they say, okay, well, that's enough now. Like, we have enough writers working, you know, that are in video games that are part of our guild. Now we'll allow it to have a category again.
And if you truly cared about recruiting video game writers to your guild, don't take away their award category.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, that's one way to get them to sign up.
Yeah, it's just stupid.
Yeah. Wow. I always, when I think of these things or when I read these things, I always wonder what that board member, you know, what that board meeting was about. Like, does anybody have any ideas of how to drive up membership this year? Well, I do. What's your idea, Fred? How about we just, like, force them all to join and we'll take away categories from them if they don't join?
It's like, probably the same people who said, I know, we'll penalize people playing or don't play enough Mortal Kombat 11.
Yeah, exactly.
Those people know each other.
Yeah. It's the same person. I used to work... for what was the company that made NeverSoft, right? Isn't that the company?
NetherRealm.
NetherRealm. I used to work for NetherRealm, and I had this really good idea there. It could work here too.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, why don't you work there anymore? Well, because of this idea. Because
it horribly backfired.
Yeah. But let's try it again. Duh, okay.
Brilliant. But you know, here's the other sad part about it. I mean, outside of that post and probably us talking about it, have you heard much about this outside of that?
Well, again, it speaks to the relevance of the Writers Guild.
Yeah.
They are so elitist that most people are like, who?
Yeah, exactly. The what? There's a Writers Guild?
Yeah.
What? That's too bad. Well, let's move on from that sad story. Mike, do you want to take the next one?
Sure. This comes from CNN Business, and Mario Kart Tour, the mobile game, is Nintendo's biggest mobile hit yet. Oh, no. And Nintendo's latest mobile app, Mario Kart Tour, was downloaded more than 90 million times in its first week. And that is a new record for Nintendo mobile games. The previous record holder was Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, which had 14.3 million installs in its first week. And this is according to data provided by analytics firm Sensor Tower. Although fans of the franchise were eager to download the game, they are less eager to spend money on it. It's free to download, but a monthly subscription of $4.99 unlocks rewards and other characters. That's before the $20 fee to unlock Mario as a playable character.
Wait, can we just pause right there? Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
You have to pay $20 to unlock Mario to play as Mario?
He's a random drop, but he's like a 1% chance or something like that. But you can pay $20 to get him 100% guaranteed.
Unbelievable. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Continue, Mike.
Thank you. It's off to a record-breaking start in terms of downloads, but revenue is a different story, said Randy Nelson, head of mobile insights at Sensor Tower. The game has made $12 million so far, according to Sensor Tower, which Nelson said is certainly impressive, but he would have expected more from 90 million downloads. Nintendo is currently offering promotions and free trials within the game. Once those deals expire, they could see a sales boost. So my brother does not play games, but he does like some Mario Kart. And he called me up and he's like, did you see the new Mario Kart game is out? And I'm like, first of all, why are you asking me that? You know the answer. And he's like, oh yeah. I'm like, thank you. Second of all, I know it's out, but I haven't downloaded it. I really don't have any intention to. He said, yeah, he's having some issues with the controls and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I honestly, here's my opinion on the subject. The more downloads this game gets, the less likely we are to get Mario Kart 9 sooner rather than later. That's what I don't know. I mean, I know it's two completely different companies and they're probably working on it right now. But I mean, if I'm looking at it with dollar signs and I'm saying, oh, here's something that's making a ton of money. Here's all this money that we're pouring into this game. Let's shift to this. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point.
I mean, yes, the game was downloaded more than 90 million times in its first week. And I contributed to that. I downloaded it again because I wanted to see how it was different from the beta. And of course, that stat doesn't show that I deleted it after 12 hours because it still sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't show active users, right, after that first week.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's an interesting thing. Well, first of all, that Animal Crossing Pocket Camp was their record holder previously, which had 14.3 million during its first week. Like, that is a huge jump. That is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
But the fact that they're not making a whole lot of money on it, let me take that back. $12 million is a lot of money.
Well, think how much they would, if they put out Mario Kart 9, how much in sales would they make in their first week?
Yeah. Exactly. Like, way more than this, I would think.
Yeah.
Like, I did not know that about Mario. To unlock Mario, you have to pay $20. I'm deleting the app right now.
I had Mario in the beta.
Oh, you did?
That must be one of those things that they changed.
They're like, oh crap, hey, we can make, it's the same guy, hey, I got this idea.
Yeah, that guy just drifts from company to company, destroying them from inside. The aliens in Independence Day.
Oh man, that's just, oh, that's so dumb. Oh, that makes me, I'm just so angry about that. That is the dumbest. I know we talked about the subscription already and like how dumb that is, that you can you could buy a game every month. You could just save up your money and buy an actual game for that kind of money. That's ridiculous.
And if they're going to do that, at least put like a little asterisk after Mario in Mario Kart Tour.
Yeah, right. Maybe
Mario-ish Kart Tour.
Yeah, exactly. This is Luigi's moment to shine. He's like, this is it. This is it.
It's a me, Luigi.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. Do you have to pay extra money to unlock any other characters, or is it just Mario?
Yeah, Mario and the fourth wheel for your cart.
Oh.
Otherwise,
you know, see, here's the thing I like about mobile games, I will say this, that they do have different events, and I like that idea, right? Like, hey, we're gonna have a special event, we're gonna have, you know, whatever, this kind of event. But there are games that are doing that outside. I mean, even Mario Kart on, you know, Nintendo Switch was having tournaments, like that was cool. But even Crash Team Racer is having some kind of Halloween event going on right now. That's cool.
Well, it's a vehicle to drive microtransactions.
Well,
it's not just a bench just for fun.
Good point. Good point.
I liked your choice of words there, Blue.
Yeah.
It was a vehicle to drive microtransactions. That was beautiful.
Yeah. It's no, it's actually surprise mechanics, people.
You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's weird. It's so weird. This is a weird time to be living in. I was on just a side note, I was on a podcast called Parent Quest. It's run by our friend Kyle, and he asked the question, what do you think, you know, technology is going to be like? Is there going to be a point where, you know, you're going to be telling, your kids are going to teaching you how to play games or how to use technology? And I said, the thing that they're probably going to teach me is how to play mobile games or how to, or about mobile games, because I don't play mobile games, and they're going to be the, you know, I'm a little afraid that that's going to be the wave of the future. It's going to be mobile games, but we'll see, I guess. Any other news that you guys had? That's all the news I had for this week. Anything else that anybody else had?
Nope.
Okay. Well, then let's move on to listeners' feedback. And listeners, you can get hold of us. Christian, how can they send us a tweet?
At GamerHeadsPC on Twitter.
And how can they send us an email?
info@GamerHeadsPodcast.com.
And how can they go to our Facebook page?
Facebook.com/GamerHeadsPodcast.
And finally, what's our website?
GamerHeadsPodcast.com.
Nice. So last week, listeners, we asked the question, what's one video game that defines your childhood? And we got quite a bit of feedback. Well, every week we get quite a bit of feedback, so it's really hard to narrow down or pick the ones that we do pick. But I have a couple here that we picked. So, Christian, you want to read the first one there?
Yeah, the great Sayaman81 tweeted, I'm picking DuckTales on NES. I remember getting it for Easter in 1990. It blew me away with amazing graphics that made me feel like I was playing the cartoon. To this day, it's still my go-to feel-good game, and I play it multiple times a year.
Wow.
How jealous am I? He's getting games in his Easter basket.
I know, right? Like,
I'll trade you my chocolate bunny. Ooh, chocolate.
Do you guys celebrate St. Nick's at all? St. Nick's Day?
I did, when I was a kid, I did.
Okay. Blue, do you at all?
I don't even know what that is.
So it's a
I was
German...
going to stay quiet and not have to say that.
Sorry. It's a German tradition. So it's like December 6th, I think it is.
December 6th.
Yeah. December 6th. And the idea is that, I don't know, Kris Kringle or something like that, or St. Nick, yeah. Comes to your house.
St. Nick's Day. Who's the guy we're talking about?
What's his name?
Phil something?
St. Phil comes to your house.
I don't know why they call it St. Nick. It's Phil that comes to your house. But but they, you traditionally put out your shoes or your socks, and they fill it with oranges and nuts and candies and such. But you know, so that's what I would get is like, you know, an orange and maybe like a candy bar or something like that, and like gold coins. Not gold coins, but chocolate coins. But this friend, yeah, I wish it was gold coins. But this kid I knew, he got a Game Boy. And I'm like, wait a minute, you got a Game Boy from Saint Nick?
Somebody get me Saint Nick's number. There's some unfair
gift-giving
going on around here.
Exactly.
Spoiled little brat. I'm sure he grew up to be a terrible person.
He was kind of a brat for sure. So
yeah, not nowadays that guy goes. He's the guy that goes around company to company.
Yeah, I got this idea.
That's the guy.
That's the guy. Yeah, nice. Mike, do you want to read the next one?
Sure. This comes from @DanTheMan98, and they tweeted Guitar Hero, but not Guitar Hero 2. Guitar Hero 3 and World Tour were a big part of my childhood.
Mm.
Sorry, Christian.
That's okay. Dan the Man is even younger than I am.
Oh.
I love the first three. World Tour is where I kind of started dropping off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Same. I think we bought them all through World Tour, and then we're like, you know, they're just getting kind of boring.
Yeah. I never got World Tour. I got 1, 2, and 3.
But there was an 80s one, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, there was an 80s. 80s, Aerosmith, Metallica, Green Day.
I didn't get any of those.
Band Hero, which was all like pop songs.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then Rock Band started doing stuff like that, too. There was like a Lego Rock Band, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then Beatles Rock Band. Yep. Yeah. It was the day that when music games were popular.
I still like doing that every once in a while. I was actually having a conversation about streaming some Guitar Hero.
You could do that.
Play is still fun. It's just
They
hit it too hard.
Yep, right.
And it got it was too
plastic
much all at once.
Peripherals everywhere.
Yeah.
We could totally do that for our Extra Life stream. We'll talk more about that later. Yeah. Blue, do you want to take the next one?
Sure, this is from @FrankGrandell, and he tweeted, Maximum Carnage. I played this just before I went into the sixth grade. I broke both arms that summer and spent nearly every waking moment battling this game. It was difficult at first gripping the controller with the cast, but I made it work.
That is insane.
That is a great, great choice.
I asked him follow-up, and he said he tripped on a fence when he was playing Frisbee.
Oh my gosh.
Geez. I know. I was like, whoa.
Have any of you guys played through a game despite an injury that would have hindered your ability to like hold a controller or whatever?
No.
I broke my arm in second grade and I don't recall that I played video games.
What about you, Mike?
I can't think of any injuries that I've had that inhibited my gaming ability. I mean, I twisted my ankle and I couldn't play Dance Dance Revolution, but that was...
Worst day ever.
Yeah.
Jeez. What about you, Christian?
There was one time I got stung by a wasp for the first time in my life, and it was on like my ring finger, and it swelled up big. It got really big, and I couldn't like move it or use it at all. But I was way into Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars on the PSP at the time. I was like halfway through it, and I just powered through it regardless with all of this like antihistamine paste on my ring finger. I just powered through it.
Wow.
It was That's a sports injury right there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nice. Christian, want to take the last one?
8-Bit Rocket tweeted, probably River Raid by Activision, Atari 2600, and the more advanced Atari 800 computer version cemented my love of horizontal scrolling shooters.
Mm.
It's another good one.
It is a good one. Yeah, those are good games. Maximum Carnage, Guitar Hero, River Raid. Good choices, everybody. DuckTales. So, cool. All right, well, let's move on to then games that we're currently playing. And we'll start with you, Mike. What games are you currently playing?
So, I have been continuing my Resident Evil Revelations 2 playthrough. And I am just a little over halfway done. And I made a bit of my own revelation. I thought that like the writing in the game was pretty awful, especially Moira. Some of the lines that she says, she's got a sailor mouth in the game, But some of the stuff she says just doesn't make sense. It's like, let's just string some swears together and see if it fits.
It was computer generated.
Yeah, it was. So there was this boss battle, and you know, when you finish the boss battle, of course, there's always a cutscene, and then so Moira delivers the final killing blow in the cutscene and delivers a one-liner. The one-liner is so terrible.
How terrible was it?
No, it was eye-rollingly terrible. It was just
you're
so
not going to tell us.
It's not appropriate for a family-friendly game.
Oh wow!
Yeah. I'm sitting there just laughing at the absurdity of it, and all of a sudden that it hit me is that Moira is Barry Burton's daughter. And in the original Resident Evil, Barry Burton had the cheesiest dialogue in the game. So either it's really, really bad writing or some of the smartest writing I've ever seen in a video game.
That's very meta.
And yes, very meta. That's actually, I wrote in my notes, I wrote so meta with Moira. and it's just, and I'm gonna give them the benefit of the doubt and say that they're this is some pretty intelligent writing. So then it made me enjoy the game more, because now I'm like, okay, I can see it. She's Barry's daughter. It makes sense now. So yeah, been playing that. Been playing a game called Galaxy Champions TV.
Yeah.
I went ahead and pre-ordered it because it was 30% off on the Switch eShop if you pre-ordered.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, I'll give that a shot, because it's basically a love letter to Super Smash TV.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. I think, Roger, do you want me to do a review for it?
Yeah. I would.
I won't get into it too much. We'll save that for the review. But basically, it's a cartoonish version of Super Smash TV. And when I say it's a version, it really is. It's like a copy paste of Super Smash TV. And that's a good thing.
That is,
because you don't see many games like that. I mean, you see games that are similar to it. You know, it's, you know, like Binding of Isaac, and a lot of these, you know, these dungeon crawler type games. But this one actually just takes this whole Smash TV formula and just grabs it and says, all right, let's just change some skins and make it a little bit different. So
that's awesome.
I'm really enjoying that. And it's more than just the arc, you know, just like play through it. And there's a level up. There's a leveling system and everything like that. So I'm enjoying
it. Oh, really? So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Can you play that online too?
No, it's local co-op.
Oh, that's too bad.
But it is co-op.
Yeah, it's co-op. That's cool. I just wish
local co-op is always so disappointing.
Yeah. Well, only because, I mean, I don't have a lot of, I mean, outside of Christian and some other friends that we work with, I don't really have a whole lot of people.
Those of us who don't have anybody to play with.
Yeah.
If you're saying it's local only co-op, it's like, never mind. Sad face.
I get the sad face because I don't really have, like, my friends that I grew up with and stuff, they don't really, you know, they're not as into games as I am.
Yeah.
So it's tough to find somebody to do a round. I'd rather do couch co-op personally, but
yeah, me too. I mean, Christian, you made that comment too, that, I mean, even people like your age are not completely into games, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's sad. Cool. Anything else, Mike?
The only other thing is I was bored, just watching something on TV, sitting at my computer. So I decided to see if Windows 10 still had a version of Microsoft Solitaire.
Yeah.
So I can gladly report that it does. And not only that, it's a completely revamped version of Solitaire. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
It's got its own daily challenges. You could level up. And in the other coolest thing, now everybody's favorite part about playing solitaire is that when you win the game, all the cards come cascading down. So beautiful. They have additional card animations, like some of the cards will attach and fly away like butterflies, they'll shoot out as fireworks. It's just, if I didn't think there could be an evolutionary step in the game of solitaire. But bravo, Microsoft. And there's achievements.
Oh, that's cool.
Why are they doing this with Solitaire? Why are they neglecting Minesweeper?
Yeah, no kidding.
I haven't tried Minesweeper. I don't know if there is an all-new version of Minesweeper.
Because if you could level up in Minesweeper and have daily challenges, I would probably never do anything else. So, wait, maybe it's for the best.
Yeah.
So...
That's
so awesome. Yeah. So I was very surprised to see the solitaire, all these additions to it since I last played it in like 1998.
Nice.
What's the best version of solitaire you've ever played ever, Mike?
The best version just Windows. So I think that's the only version of solitaire I've ever played. Oh, yeah.
There's so many online. There's so many you can get on your phone.
Yeah, I got to go with the classics.
I'm with you, Mike. I purposely played Solitaire way more than Spider Solitaire, despite the fact I kind of like Spider Solitaire more, and it made more sense to my little brain because of that final animation when you win with the cascading cards. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. There's a game. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, there's a game that's somewhat like Solitaire in a way. Card Thief? That's on the Google Play Pass? There's my plug for the Google Play Pass. There's my plug for mobile gaming.
There's Fairway Solitaire. Have you ever played that? Anyone?
No.
Ooh, that one's really good. That one's free, but I also think there's a paid version where you don't get ads, where there's like cards everywhere, and then you like click on the one that's a number above you or a number below you, and you like create chains where you're like wiping the cards off the board while you're chaining up the cards that you pick.
Yeah,
that's satisfying.
That's very similar to Card Thief, actually. That same premise. Yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off, Mike. What were you going to say?
I was just going to tell Christian that this version of Solitaire includes Klondike, Spider, Free Cell Pyramid, and Tritons. Wow,
there you go.
And you can level up on each individual.
What?
Holy crap. Good Lord.
But there's daily challenges. But to get the premium edition, you can pay $1.99 a month.
Ooh. I would pay $1.99 a month for premium Minesweeper. I've never heard of most of these things you guys are talking about because I wasn't playing Solitaire. I was playing Minesweeper.
That's funny. I didn't realize how Minesweeper worked until 3 years ago, despite me trying to play it all the time. I thought it was just completely random. And I was like, why would anyone play this? I would see like a 3 and then I'd click next to it and die. And I was like, well, I guess I don't get those 3 points because that's how I thought it worked.
Oh, my gosh. I was so obsessed with Minesweeper. I loved it because when you get really... like really understand how it works, you don't see numbers anymore, you see patterns. And so you know if you see a 2-3-2 it means this, or if you see a string of ones it means this, you know, or a 5 it means this. I loved it so much.
Yeah, that's
so Solitaire.
Yeah. Solitaire.
Minesweeper.
Yeah.
Great taste.
It is available. I just checked, but I don't think there's like, I didn't download it, but you can get it as a free app for your Windows 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's not premium with daily challenges and leveling up.
Oh.
It's fine.
That's too bad. Well, there you go, Blue. You can have your own campaign to get them to get that coin.
You could do a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Oh, hey. Yeah.
Really, the game can't be that hard to program, right? Christian?
No, you could probably do it for fun.
Yeah, exactly. We could make our own Minesweeper premium edition. Cool. Anything else, Mike?
Nope, that was it.
What about you, Christian? What have you been playing?
I finished Untitled Goose Game. I played through all 4 or 5 hours of it, and I don't like it at all.
Really?
I don't like Untitled Goose Game.
You might be the only one.
I think that's all I've heard about all week is how much people love Untitled Goose Game.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it was making its rounds across the interwebs, and there were plenty of memes being created in the game's art style, which were very amusing. And so that piqued my interest. I saw a couple YouTube videos, but there was one YouTube video I watched, and at the beginning, they said that they would highly recommend playing Untitled Goose Game knowing as little about it as possible. So that's what I did. I turned the video off, and I sat on it, and I said, I will willingly avoid all of this quality content that I want to consume because I want to enjoy Untitled Goose Game to its fullest extent, and I did not enjoy it at all.
Wow.
So all you're doing... Yeah, you're a goose, and you're waddling around very slowly, in a very cumbersome fashion. It doesn't control extremely well, and you bend your neck down, and then you bite your beak on objects, and then you slowly drag objects into a direction to mildly inconvenience the people that are running around in this town.
That is the most apt description of this game that I think I've ever heard.
Yeah.
It was a stealth game, I thought, Christian.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta hide from the guys sometimes, or you can just drag something else, and then the AI will be like, don't know what to do, I'll go for this thing, and then you just grab the thing you need, and then start dragging it.
Oh.
It's just dragging stuff. You're just dragging stuff across the ground very slowly, very methodically, and I didn't have a lot of fun with it. There are, like, checklists of things to do. Like, everyone points out one of the first things to do is get the rake in the lake. And then you'd slowly drag the rake into the lake, and then it crosses off the checklist. And then I'd kind of just sit there and feel empty inside because it wasn't fun doing it.
If they had cascading rakes coming down, do you think that would have changed it?
Yes, yes. That's what these memes around the internet led me to believe, was that this game was bonkers. Like, they were taking previous memes and slapping the Goose Game art style on it. And I was like, whoa, am I going to run across these memes in the game? Because people were sharing this, being like, this is the greatest game of the century. Insert meme here with Goose Game art style. Because art style is great, and the music is really great, too. It's like this improvisational piano that fits really well. But when you're playing it, it feels cumbersome, and you're just dragging stuff to mildly inconvenience people, and that's it. What they should have done is gone the Goat Simulator route, because I can appreciate me some good old Goat Simulator, where you are a force of nature plowing your horns into anything and everything that stands into your path. And that goes wacky and zany with things in a way that Goose Game never does. Goose Game's very tame. And I feel like that's the tone they're going for. But it kind of bored me because of how tame it was. Whereas in Goat Simulator, I can go and summon Beelzebub and become a demon goat and go make people catch fire all day. That's what I want.
So it was too realistic as a goose, do you think?
It's too realistic? I mean, I guess. It's just kind of cumbersome. Boring. Yeah, slow, lumbering, and like the first 10 minutes, as soon as I started controlling this goose and approaching like the first set piece, the dude in the garden, I was like, okay, I don't think I like this. And I stuck with it for all 5 hours. There's an end, and the checklist of goals that you get kind of lead you to where you're supposed to get to the end. But checking off those checklists didn't feel very satisfying to me, and it was slow and uninteresting for me.
This is coming from a guy that like collects platinum trophies. I'm just saying, like, that means a lot, I think, coming from you, because this is your kind. I mean, you're all about achievements.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but that's not all he's about.
No, I know. But
I think people much older like us would refer to this as a chill game.
Oh.
There you go. Yeah. That's a good way to put it, I guess. Yeah. But I think it's meant to be played in like groups of people. It's meant to have other observers, because then you can have people shouting, oh, hey, screw with this guy this way. And then you do it and they're like, ha ha, oh, that's so funny. He's chasing after you because you have his boot. Ha.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'll agree with that, Christian. I was watching a friend stream it last week.
Yeah.
And after watching her stream it, I mean, I was planning to get it, but after watching her, I'm like, okay, it looks like a fun game, but now that I've seen all this, I guess I don't need to pick it up. Yeah. It just seemed like a game that was just as fun to watch other people play.
But once
you've seen it, yeah, then you're like, I'm good.
It's one trick pony.
Ah, there you go. That's a good phrase for it. Yeah. I mean, it's selling well, which is good to see. I think they said like the Switch sales are off the charts or something like that, which is good to see.
It's like 100,000 or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to see an independent game thrive, because, I mean, they're going for a niche, and I guess I'm just not the right niche for them.
Hmm. Well, I think your perspective, though, is well noted. And yeah, I respect your opinion. So
thank you.
You're welcome. This is not the kind of podcast where I'm going to argue with you and say, you're dumb. I can't believe how stupid that was. Like, no, like, that's not how we operate here. So anything else, Christian?
Another game I played through for our continuing Socket YouTube video series I've got going on with Tucker was Sonic Heroes.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I played through that in like 8 years, 6 years, something like that. Because back in the day, I had a GameCube, and I had a brother who was crazy obsessed with Sonic to a like scary degree. And he is like my window into the Sonic fandom, because I can imagine all these people who create their own original Sonic OCs and fan fictions are the kind of people that my brother was. He would obsessively draw pictures of his own hedgehog, and it was black and red, and its name was Axel. And he would draw like all kinds of pictures of him with the other characters, and he would write up stories about them. And there was one time he mailed a bunch of them over to Sonic Team. And he got a letter back saying, thank you so much for sending us your material. We're sorry we're not looking for new designs, but we hope you keep them coming.
Wait, what?
That's awesome.
That's awesome, but it's like, we're not looking for new designs, but keep sending them to us. What? Mike, you know what that's like.
I do. I was rejected by Nintendo. When I was a wee little tyke.
Yeah.
At the tender age of 7.
Yeah. How old was your brother?
Ruined me forever.
Aww. Aww.
My brother was probably like 13.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Mike ends up on the Gamerheads podcast because of that.
That's right.
So, we're
the island of misfit game developers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, my brother is the reason why we got Sonic Heroes on the GameCube at the time. And I was content just watching him play it until I actually got behind the wheel myself and was pleasantly pleased and surprised by how fun Sonic Heroes is. It's just a grand old time, especially the first handful of stages. That's the thing. This game has like four teams, each of which have three characters, but you control all three characters at the same time. But each of those four teams have separate, segregated storylines that you have to play through, and they all go through the same sets of levels. They all just have slightly different objectives in each level. And so it ends up being exhausting because you play through one playthrough, one of the four teams, and that itself takes like 5-6 hours. And the last thing you want to do is jump immediately back in and do it all again 3 more times. So it's very fatiguing in that way if you really want to see the end of Sonic Heroes. But if you just want to play a fast, fun Sonic platformer for like an hour, then playing the first couple stages on any of the characters is a blast. Hmm. You can't really go wrong with it.
Hmm. That's awesome. I've not played that game.
Really?
Oh, I'm not. You know, I haven't played many Sonic games, actually.
I wish I could say the same.
That's the statement of the year.
Yeah, right. What year did this game come out?
It came out in 2003.
2003. So, like, what, you are close to halfway done through the games?
Sure. I hope so. I hope we're further than halfway.
Okay.
We'll see. There's a lot of portable games still.
Yeah. Interesting.
You sound like you're the one getting fatigue right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You're over halfway there.
Yeah.
Where can people catch that?
It's YouTube. Type in the socket and pretty much any Sonic game pre-2003 at this point, and you'll be able to find it.
Nice. Anything else, Christian?
I've just been playing, like, put 10 more hours into Persona 5, continuing to chip away at that. That's about it.
Nice. Cool. What about you, Blue?
So I have been working on Code Vein.
Oh, yeah.
And now that I'm getting into it past where the free demo ended, I am realizing it is so much harder than I was expecting. I said, this is like an easier Soulsborne game. No, it's not. It's basically anime vampire Bloodborne. It plays very similarly. And it's like Bloodborne. It's one of those games where you don't really do well. You just die a little less each time.
Nice.
So, yeah. Definitely go into it with the correct expectations.
I had a friend who tried out the demo a little bit, and he said that you can change classes on the fly. That sounds like it would get crazy complex. Is that how it is?
Yeah, it is because the first class that I've been using is just basically, I forget what it's called, but it's the one for melee combat. But you max those, your different classes out very quickly. It doesn't take much to max them out as far as ability-wise and strength-wise. And then you just keep getting all these new ones. And it's overwhelming. I'm like, I don't know what this does. Is this really that much better than this one or than the 7 that I already have? So I'm not doing too much with that. And if I have a complaint about the game, I think that it's just it's the way that it levels up the characters is just it's too complicated. I mean, it's one thing to be really in depth and really be able to customize your gameplay, but I think they went over that into it's just being it's just what is even going on here? It's too much.
There are a lot of people that said that they weren't a fan of the game. Are you still enjoying the game? I know that you liked the game when you were playing the demo.
Yeah, I know I am because I like Bloodborne. I think it's fun. It's you have to, you know, be mentally prepared for that kind of challenge. Right now, I am stuck on really the first major boss, which I don't know if you guys heard, like, people were making fun of American journalists because, and I really should look up the article, but some journalists came out and said that it was terrible because it was full of anime fan service. And so there were all these jokes going out about how American journalists just can't handle the, you know, the Japanese art style and everything. And one of the bosses that they, I think they referred to as the one I'm on where it's, gosh, I don't even remember her name. I'm not prepared. I'm sorry, everyone. But it's like, it's basically this woman in a bikini, except for she's got a snake tail and like butterfly wings and she's a giant poison butterfly and she's destroying me. Like I can't even get close to hurt her basically because she puffs out these poison clouds and she's got a ranged attack with that snake tail. And so, you know, there's work to be done. If you struggled against Father Gascoigne in Bloodborne, this is going to be a familiar scenario to you, where it's just a boss that's just so overwhelming at first, and you have to really chip away at them and figure out how to be successful.
It doesn't sound like my kind of game, actually, Blue.
What? I thought you loved Bloodborne. You don't even need weapons when you play
That's true. No, I'm so good at it. I don't enjoy it, but I'm that good. I don't need weapons. So,
but one thing I did notice, or in Code Vein, you can play online.
Oh.
And so I think that if you get enough friends together, you can just tank your way through these boss battles.
Oh, cool.
Okay, so you could play straight up co-op?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Oh.
I mean, haven't tried it, but I assume I've seen some videos where it appears that's what people are doing.
Does it expose those systems to you? Because in like Dark Souls, there's co-op, but you have to like have a certain item and you have to use it in a certain place. Is that kind of what Code Vein's doing?
I don't know. I haven't even played. Like when you first launch the game, it asks if you want to play online or offline.
Gotcha.
I'm picking offline.
There you go.
So that could be. But yeah, I think it's fun, but it's hard. And so if you're interested in the game, know that it's not just going to be a fluffy anime time. It's hard. It's legit.
And there's no difficulty settings, right?
You know, there might be.
Ooh.
It never occurred to me. I don't ever put the difficulty down.
Mm-hmm.
That's like giving up. I don't do that. So, well, okay. I would have done it in a Gelos if it was
an option. Yeah. Nice. Anything else?
So I have spent a lot of time this week with my good friend Greedfall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Teething.
Yeah, the teeth game. So I had a disaster with this game, basically. So you get into the game and you go to the island and you're in the city of New Serene, which is kind of your home hub. And the very first quest that you're given is called the Battle of Red Spears. And when you complete that, it gives you three different main quests that you can follow. And it doesn't give any sort of guidance about what you should do first or when. So I just was randomly following one called The Ancient Secret. And I'm just following that along, and the story is still really interesting. I was interested in the pieces of story that I was uncovering in following this quest line of The Ancient Secret. So the last quest in The Ancient Secret is a little, I guess it's a sub-quest called The Prince's Secret. And when you complete The Prince's Secret, you get this big, irreversible story event.
Mm-hmm.
And This story event is completely dependent on whatever side quests you've been doing and whether or not you've been building your relationships with your party members. I hadn't done any of that.
Oops.
Because, I mean, this is an RPG, right?
Yeah.
Typically, you go into an RPG, you're used to having 4,000 quests, right?
Yeah.
And you can do them in the order you like, generally, because you have time.
Yeah.
Right? There's no consequences if you don't do them right away.
Yeah.
But
most
this
times you don't want to do them right away either.
Right. Right. Or, you know, every once in a while, you're like, if you're playing Final Fantasy, you'll get to a segment and they say, now, if you walk into this room, you're not going to be able to come back for a long time. Are you sure you want to proceed?
Yeah.
And then you can make an informed decision of, oh, this is an important moment. I didn't realize. Let me step back and make sure I know, you know, what I want to do going forward.
Yeah.
But not so much in Greedfall. So when you complete the Prince's Secret, you walk into the palace and you get the big irreversible story event. And so where that left me is you have to go and rescue four people who are in this city. And it is packed with enemies. And I was underleveled. So... you know how RPGs usually will designate or give some sort of designation to enemies that are just way stronger than you so that you know that you shouldn't mess with them. So in a lot of games, they have red skulls above them. And then that's what Greedfall does is they have if the enemy is several levels ahead of you, then they have red skulls above them and you should know not to mess with them. But in this scenario, that's all there was, filling the whole city. There was nothing but Red Skull enemies. They were in the palace. They were all over. They were guarding the gates to get out of the city. It was insane. And so I could fight them with my rifle because it was strong enough, and then I could keep my distance because they kill me with one hit. They're that much stronger than me.
Mm.
So I managed to rescue three of the four people by shooting these Red Skull enemies. But then I went to rescue the fourth one, and outside her house is just this huge pack of Red Skull enemies. And I only have bullets left at that point. So, I didn't stand a chance. I'm like, my companions are dying in one hit, and I'm, like, running around with, like, seven of them behind me, and they have those, like, giant heavy hammers that will just crush you. And I'm, like, running and screaming, but there's nowhere to go because there's no safe place in the whole city. And so it was just, I reached a fail point in the game. I could not continue. And Greedfall did not give me any indication that this could happen. There was no suggested order for completing the quest. There was no suggested level before you attempt this quest. There was nothing like Final Fantasy does where it's like, if you go in this room, you can't come back. Do you want to continue? There was nothing.
No.
Greedfall just let me fail. get essentially a game over.
Yeah.
So I was 9 hours into it at that point, and I'm not the kind of person who has multiple saves in games. So I thought I was going to have to start completely over.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So by the grace of the video game gods, I found a second save, but it was 5 hours earlier.
Oh, no.
Yes. So I lost 5 hours of progress.
Oh, no.
And
I would have quit. I would have quit right there.
I almost did. Were it not for the obligation of this review, I would have quit.
Yeah.
And I was messaging the well-read mage because that's who I'm reviewing this for. And I was like, this is what happened. And he says, you don't have to finish it. You can write the review right now. And I thought about it. I almost did. But I was like, you know, specifically because I don't like this game, especially a lot more now. I don't like it. Now I feel like I need to do the review really the right way. Because, you know, otherwise I'm being just as unfair as the game is.
Yeah. That's funny.
Uh-huh.
So did you make it through that part then, or are you still?
So I did. I went back 4 hours earlier and I changed everything that I did. I did all the side quests so that my companions are all nice and happy with me. And then last night I finally went to this fateful, big, irreversible story event and I sailed through it, no problem, because now I was level 20 as opposed to 7 or whatever I was before. And so now I got through it.
Oh nice. My gosh.
Now I'm 22 hours into it, having lost 5 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Dang.
Yeah, that would be very frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Christian, did you run into that same? I mean,
no, I didn't run into that issue. I also save a lot. I forgot what it is that conditioned me to do this, but there was one game where I was playing. I think I was going for the Platinum Trophy or whatever, and they like highly emphasize save in every slot possible. So whenever I'm playing any RPG, like Persona 5, right now, all of my save slots are full, and I just rotate through them all and overwrite the next one because I know that there's. Even however small of a chance, but it still exists, the fact that some games just break on you.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, now I'm a crazy person. I have 31 saves.
Oh, my gosh.
Smart.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, do you save your games a lot?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a lot of save slot files? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
See, I might have 2. That's about all I would have. And then usually I like the game that I'm playing right now, it just has a quick save. So I just quick save and then it does. It's not like a. It doesn't save it to the save file. It just saves it to, like, the, I don't know. I don't want to call it instant memory because it's not. But when you load it back in, it just says, oh, you want to load your quick save. But if you don't, if you load the game, you're not going to get back to that quick save spot.
Yeah. Yeah. This one does that, too. It's got an auto save. But if you die and you need to load from your last save point, it won't load you from the auto save. It'll load you from your last save. So that is also contributing to me being a crazy person. I have 31 saves and they're all like 10 minutes apart.
That's really annoying. That's kind of bad design, too.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of things in this game that I think they did not think through. Like, for example, the charisma that Christian was saying that he loves so much.
Yeah.
So it gives you your odds when using charisma. You can have 25% chance of success or 50 or 75 or 100% chance of success. But there's no need to put your skill points into charisma because... if you know ahead of time that you're going to be speaking to somebody, you just save it.
And that's what we in the business call save scumming, Blue.
Yes, okay. So there's a term for it. But yeah, then you go through the conversation, you try the charisma option. If it fails, you just load your save game again, try it again until it gives you success.
I did that in Octopath Traveler when you try to steal something off of somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you get caught, like your relationship with that town or whatever goes down, but I'm just like, well, I'll just save it. And, you know, it's like a, you know, 10% chance of being able to steal this item off this person. Well, I'll just save it and then just keep trying until I'm able to get that item.
Yeah, exactly. I've been doing the same with the skill points actually altogether. Because as long as you have a memory stone, you can reset the skill tree entirely anytime you like. So let's say you get to a lock, it's a level 3 lock, but you don't have level 3 lock picking skills. No matter. Yeah, you just reset your skill tree, divvy the points to what you need at that moment, and then you pick the lock.
Heck yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're smart, Blue.
Am I smart or does the game have holes in it?
Yeah.
Save scumming is very common on PC because quick save is usually just a key. So you just hit like F5 is usually the quick save button. And then like F8 will be the quick load button. So you can just like in half a second, boom, load back to where I was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then there's one other thing about the game that's making me crazy that I have to mention is your companions will have side quests for you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you happen to say, yeah, I'll help you, your companion gets locked into your party and you can't get rid of them until you finish the side quest. So if you decide not to do it right away, you've got this companion locked into your party. And so it was annoying, but it wasn't a big deal until I got the last companion, Aphra. And she's 80% useless in combat. She cannot stay alive. The only thing she does is distract the enemy a little bit until she dies. And so I was up against this tough boss with Aphra locked into my party. And I was like, this sucks. I want to de-accept her quest so I can get somebody useful in here, but it wouldn't let me.
Get out of my party. You're out.
Exactly. And now I'm afraid to talk to her again.
Yeah.
That's great.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice.
But actually, I should mention real fast that Greedfall put out an update last night.
Oh.
So it's version 1.03. And among the fixes in it that are listed is the quest, The Prince's Secret, unlocks as intended. I don't know what that means. But I wonder, I don't know. See, I have listened to so many people talk about how they love this game, and so many people are streaming this game, and I've never seen any hint of anybody running into that fail point that I did. So I don't know if that's what they fixed or not. I might be the only person playing the game who ever did that.
That's funny. How much more do you have of the game?
I don't know. Probably half of it.
Wow.
And it's taking longer than I want because now I'm afraid to not do the side quest.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, that's, well, better you than me, Blue, I guess.
Oh my gosh.
Anything else, Blue?
Nope.
For myself, so I've been playing a game that I couldn't talk about for a while, but now I can. I've been playing The Alliance Alive on the Nintendo Switch. It was a 3DS game that came out in March of 2018, so it's actually really not that old for a game. And they remastered it, and now it's on the Switch. It's also on the PlayStation 4 as well. And it's an RPG game, and it's different than your traditional RPG. Like, the leveling is different. I don't want to go into too much. I'll talk about it when I do my review for the game. But I will say this. When I first started playing the game, I didn't really like the art style, and it really kind of turned me off. It's kind of, you know, the chibi kind of art style, and the feet are really, really small. And then it's interesting, like, the characters, they're not so bad. The hand drawing, but then they would have, like, the backgrounds are all, like, polygons and just kind of dirty-looking polygons, and I thought, I don't know if I really like this. But as I started playing more of it, became something I actually liked. I came accustomed to it, I guess, or something, I'm not sure.
Drew on you?
Maybe, I guess so. And it's not bad. I mean, the thing I really like about this game, I will say, is the writing and the characters. So I know one thing that, Christian, you mentioned that you absolutely hate about Octopath Traveler is the fact that the characters really don't have any reason to be partying with each other, right? And it just, like, this is a bunch of people going on adventures together. And I was like, well, that's kind of how D&D is. And then I played this game, and the characters do have a lot of interaction with each other, and there is reasons that they work together, and there is camaraderie amongst them, and there is relationships between them. And then I realized, oh, this is why Christian doesn't like Octopath Traveler, because that relationship that these characters have, I mean, that's probably the strongest thing in this game, is the writing and the character creation in this game that they have. It's really good, and I really like it a lot. And I've been streaming. I started streaming it because I couldn't stream it until the embargo was yesterday noon Pacific time. And so then I streamed it this morning, part of the Saturday morning serial series. So you can check that out at twitch.com/gamerheadspodcast. And I made it to boss when I was streaming it, and it was my first boss that I actually died at, and I was like, oh, that was interesting, because up to this point I had no problem with any bosses, but that one was kind of hard. I was able to beat it in the stream, but yeah, it's a good game. It's,
you gonna do some grinding?
Well, then after that I decided that I should do some grinding. Ooh. the one thing I will say that's interesting about this game is that you can do these like Final Fantasy calls them breaks, right? Where you can do, like, those Uber moves. And this one, you can do an Uber move. So, like, you have this bar that fills up And once all the way full, then you can do like a final move, but it destroys your weapon in the process. So you should always like, so that was the thing, like, I always have to carry an extra weapon because if I do a weapon break or do one of these breaks, it's going to break my weapon. But it's interesting. It's such an interesting like idea behind it. And the leveling, well, okay, I won't talk too much about it, but it's an interesting way of leveling the characters. I'll talk more about that in our review. But it comes out on Tuesday, the 8th of October, for the Nintendo Switch and PlayStation 4.
Is it the next Octopath Traveler?
No, it's better than Octopath Traveler.
Oh.
Yeah.
Big words. Wow.
It's better than Octopath Traveler.
One of your favorite games of 2018?
I mean, the artwork, I will say, is better than Octopath Traveler. I like the artwork better in Octopath Traveler, but the game itself, this is a much better game. The way that you level your characters up, I don't have to sit there and grind every character and then have to swap them out. I mean, it's just a better game. It's a better game. Way better.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like it a lot. I mean, but RPGs are my thing. So, like.
So why are you whining about grinding?
Oh, no. I mean, well, yeah, that's true. No, but you don't have to grind. That's the thing. Like, you don't have to grind in this game. You can.
But that's an RPG staple.
I know.
You like the genre. You have to like that.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, I mean, there are parts, probably, I mean, like that boss, I probably should have grinded a little bit more than I did, but I was able to beat the boss. I just had to do a little bit more strategy when I fought him. So, I don't know. It's a good game. There's some things, and I'll talk about it in my review, there's some things that I think that it could have improved on, but just the characters and the writing behind the characters, the story, and the way that you can level up your characters and how they handle leveling, and you can specialize in different weapons, like, you can really customize your character and how you want to have them interact with the environments and such, and how you use your characters. It's way better than Octopath Traveler.
Wow.
In my opinion. But Octopath Traveler is very like railroad. Like this is like, this character is going to do this, and this is what their character is designed for. And you can swap out your characters based on like how you want to, or what kind of characters you want to have. Like, if you want to have a healer, if you want to have like a magic person, if you want to have like a tank, if you can swap those characters out. But this game, like, you can actually make your characters. Like, I'm going to make this character specifically my healer. I'm going to make this character specifically my tank. And then you can train them up to do that. And that's awesome. That's so cool. Like,
you
I
can
love
do that in Octopath Traveler also. You unlock a secondary job slot true. So you that's can make true. Your people hybrids of whatever you want.
That's true. That's true. But not right away in the beginning of the game.
No.
Right? Yeah. So.
Pretty early on, though.
Yeah. So, I don't know. But the fact that you had to swap out. If you want to continue with each character's mission, you have to only have a party of four, and then you swap them out, and this is kind of annoying. But yeah, stay tuned for a review for that. So I've been playing that. The other game, so I talked about local co-op, and I said that I don't have a lot of people to play local co-op with, but there is one game that I was able to play with my wife, and she really liked it, and also with one of our coworkers, Steve, and he really liked it. Heave Ho! I've been playing Heave Ho! Have you guys heard anything about this game?
Mm-mm.
Some guys with stretchy arms or something like that.
Kind
they all
of.
Look blobbish.
Yeah. So it's, you are like this little, so it's published by Devolver, and you are like this little, I don't know, circle creature with arms, and there's you have to work together. So each of you has a character. And you work together to work across these platforms. So the artwork is very simple. And there's a finish line. And it's, you know, like the platforms might be kind of far apart. So you might have to work together to get there to either create a human chain or whatever. So your arms are kind of long. And what you're really doing is using control stick to like swing your character with your arms. And you use the right trigger to hold with the platform with your right hand, and a left trigger to hold your platform with your left hand. And then you grab, you can grab your characters and then toss them to grab onto another part of like the like another platform, and then you swing over to try to grab the catch onto them. It's kind of like mountain climbing in a way. Like, that's the way I like imagine. I mean, I never went mountain climbing, but that's the way I imagine it from like the movies. So it's a race to get to the finish, and then they, you know, you can get your top score by how quickly you can complete the race. But it's goofy. It's so goofy in this game. There's a bird that flies by and poops on you. Like, then your character is covered with poop. And then the other day, my wife and I were playing, and this huge llama comes walking by. So, you know, we're trying to swing from platform to platform to get to the finish line. Mm-hmm. And this huge llama walks by, and my wife is like, "What the heck is this?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I've never seen this before." And then it farts. Like, so it's a small green gas, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It fills up the whole screen. So then you can't see. And I'm like, "Uh-oh, I can't see where you are." Like, she has her character's arm stretched out to catch me as I swing over there. I'm like, this is a leap of faith because I can't see you anymore. I don't know. It's an interesting game. It's a silly game. It's silly, but we laughed so hard playing that game.
Is it more cooperative or competitive, these races that you're talking about?
Cooperative. So you both have to get to the end of the finish line.
Gotcha. Is there single player also?
There is. So you can play single player. It's not as fun. So I started playing single player. And I think they moved the platforms, or at least the platforms might be different, so you can make some of these jumps. Because it's all physics-based, so you take, like, your character and you hold on to a side of the platform, and then you swing with your controller, and then you let go of the trigger, and then you know, as you get closer to the other platform, you quickly grab with both of your hands to grab the platform. It's super simple. It's not, like, complicated. It's a simple mechanic, but it's a lot of fun. Like, I have not laughed so hard like that in a very long time when you're playing that game. So it's a good party game. You can play up to four people too, which is awesome.
Are there like a finite number of levels that you're playing through?
So you unlock different levels. I don't know how many levels there are. We haven't unlocked all of them yet, but I think we made it through like maybe five or six different levels.
Okay, so every level can be played one or two players, is what you're saying, and they just change it a little bit?
Yep.
Okay, gotcha.
And then I think so. I'm going to have to play it as a single player again because it's been a while since I played it as a single player. But then you can go back and try to beat your score that you got on the level, so you can try to go faster.
Mm.
Yeah. So, and like I said, it's simple graphics, and the concepts are very simple. It's like it's a simple game, but man, it is so funny. Like, there'll be times where, like, I'll grab Tanya's character, And I'm holding on to the edge of a side of the ledge, and I'm swinging her, and she's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Okay, I'm just going to let you go, and I'm going to throw you as far as I can." Then she's like, "I don't think this is going to work." I'm like, "No, I think it's going to work." And I throw her, and then, like, either I overshot the throw, then she dies. And when your character dies, like, there's blood that's splattered, like, all over the screen.
Oh, my. So is this not very kid-friendly?
Well, I mean, the blood looks cartoony. It's, like, blue and green and,
gotcha,
and, you know, different kind of colors like that. But it's just a goofy game. It's a game that I think, like, if you got a bunch of people together and played it as a party game, that would be a lot of fun. So I played a lot of that. So those are the two games that I've been playing quite a bit of this past week. All right, so before we get out of here then, why don't we go around and tell people how they can get a hold of us? And Mike, how can people get a hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter at TCThrowers, and you can also find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/TCThrowers, and you can find the Controller Throwers podcast on iTunes and Google Play Music.
Nice. And Christian, how can people get a hold of you?
I'm also on Twitter at Christian Kubza, or you can read my reviews at newgamenetwork.com or listen to one at gamerheadspodcast.com.
Nice. And Blue, how can people get a hold of you?
You can almost always find me on Twitter. My handle is at WritersView, and it's spelled with a Y, so WRY. And then I also have a website, which is writersview.com.
Nice. And listeners, as I mentioned before, you can always get a hold of us. Probably the best way is through Twitter, and that's GamerheadsPC on Twitter. You can also go to our Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/GamerheadsPodcast. You can send us an email at info@GamerheadsPodcast.com. Or you can also go to our website at gamerheadspodcast.com. That's where you see all our new reviews, new episodes, news information that we have, that we'll post news articles up there too. One other thing I just want to mention before we get out of here is that we are going to be doing an Extra Life event this year. So if you're not familiar with Extra Life, it is a organization that raises money for children's hospitals, and you can sign up for that and you can create your own account and then raise money for children's hospitals. So we're playing for the Marshfield Clinic. I'm playing for the Marshfield Clinic Children's Hospital. The whole team is actually geared towards the Marshfield Clinic Children's Hospital. But on November the 2nd, we'll be doing a marathon of streaming where we're going to stream games and ask for people to help out the children and give donations during that time. So I'll have a link to our Extra Life page right on our show notes, so you can leave donations if you can. That'd be great. And I think we are targeting at about $1,000 to raise for the Marshfield Clinic. So that would be awesome if anybody can help out with that and just watch and hang out with us while we stream. It's going to be a crazy time for sure. Do you guys want to say anything else about that?
I've never streamed before, so this will be interesting.
Yeah, I know. I'm excited about this, Blue. This will be awesome. So we'll have to talk about like schedule and what we're all going to do. But I think like what I like to see is, or I like to do is do some like, you know, Jackbox games and such that so other people can join in and play along. So, and maybe we'll have different prizes that we'll give out if we hit certain different, you know, price points or donation points. And I'm also thinking about maybe doing something special for the highest donator as well. So we'll think about that too. So we'll talk more about that, but that is something that is going on the 2nd of November. So you can go to twitch.tv/gamerheadspodcast. That's where we'll be streaming most of this. So check us out there. All right, Mike, thank you so much for joining us today.
Always a pleasure.
And Christian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Blue, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And listeners, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time and giving us a listen. If you like the podcast and you want to leave us a review, you can do so. You can go to iTunes. There'll be a link right to our iTunes account. And you can leave us a review there. Leaving us a review does help us grow the show. Not only does it give us feedback on what you like and what you'd like to see more of, but also giving us reviews. It's a way for iTunes to also promote our show on iTunes so more people can hear it as well. All right, with that, we'll bid you adieu, and thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week. See ya.
Bye.
So long.